Hey, it's Nudia from Vocalo. Got plans July 11th? Now you do. Join me for Vocalo's free summer meltdown concert at Bottom Lounge with Adam Killa and Taylor Bennett. We'll have merch giveaways and surprise guests. Learn more at wbez.org/events.
Hey Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around till the end of this podcast to get the latest on what's happening in and around Chicago. But first, this past weekend, Chicago saw another holiday with a deadly spike in gun violence. 8 people were killed, nearly 40 others were wounded, and a drive-by mass shooting in Roseland drew national attention, including comments from President Trump. Meanwhile, local violence interrupters are calling for a stronger focus on prevention. So now that summer has begun, and as shootings tend to rise, what solutions are actually working? At the table was Sam Castro, Director of Strategic Initiatives and Partnerships with the Institute for Nonviolence Chicago, Cedric Hawkins, who's an outreach supervisor for Chicago CRED, and Emmanuel Andre, the Chicago's deputy mayor for community safety. The conversation started with reaction to President Trump's comments that he, quote, could make Chicago a safe city in 1 month. The deputy mayor went first.
My response to that would be, you know, we have what exists and the importance of continued support from the federal government, especially in terms of some of these investment dollars that we've seen disappear in the infrastructure of public safety. So I think that's where we need to look at in terms of, especially if you look at over the last 3 years, the successes that Chicago has had. We're not happy where we're at, but in terms of the decrease that we've seen in violence all across the board, including last summer, which was a historic year for Chicago. We're not happy with that, but we do need sustained investment and leadership from the federal government to be able to continue what we're seeing.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that. Cedric, I want to know what sort of comes to your mind every time this something like this happens and then it sort of, you know, jumps to national airwaves.
So for me, you know, the first thing I look at is that, you know, what type of shooting it was, right? And I understand when it's a mass shooting, it's multiple individuals. If it's one person being shot, it's coming out of that same weapon, right? And the thing for me is, without multiple mass shootings, we probably wouldn't be where we at right now. We probably would be down like last year. So to hear, you know, our chief say that he can clean up Chicago in a week, a month, a year, whatever that may be, it's just something that is unbelievable for me, because my thing is Chicago has a mental health problem. That's the real problem. It's really not a gun violence problem. It's a mental health issue problem. So the thing for me is to be able to help individuals mentally instead of just coming to lock everybody up. The thing about it is, if you can clean up Chicago with the rest, you're still putting Chicago in a position where we have a mental health issue.
Mm. Sam, what's on your mind seeing President Trump's social media posts?
I'm going to ride the wave with the deputy mayor. I think that if the president really cares and wants to support, pour into what we have now. We have built a civilian infrastructure between CVI, the mayor's office, professional understanding with law enforcement. So whatever worked last year, pour into that, and then we can double down on everything that's happening good versus bringing in National Guard, who's not used to policing in communities. And as we've seen, he did it before and it didn't work out and people ended up being hurt and afraid. And I don't think that's right for the community.
Mm. So when you see a weekend like, did you have something to say, Deputy
just,
Mayor?
Just one last point on this. I think one of the issues that happens when it shifts the conversation. So we're now only focused on a ludicrous claim that's put out there in sort of the conversation around the investments and around, well, what really happened that evening and how to intervene in that, how to prevent that. And that's, I think, one of the most problematic issues that you have when statements are like, are made like that. Now that becomes the focus and the energy on the media, on the ecosystem, versus how could we prevent this versus just reactionary.
Well, so, we have to report what happened.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, the issue is not reporting what happened. The issue is in terms of where does the investment go to, in terms of what direction that conversation go into, right? It should be focused on the work that's happening on the ground and the successes that they've seen and the challenges and what's needed. Those are the conversations that should be happening. Okay, what is needed to be able to continue on the successes of the of last year or the year before that, versus reevaluating something that we know don't work, which is just we're going to figure out how to arrest our way out of this and arrest every single person that we can think.
Mm-hmm. You brought up the key word a moment ago, prevention, right? So when I look to you, Cedric and Sam, I wonder how you prepare for moments like this, right? We go into these long weekends, especially in the summertime. A lot of time we can sort of almost predict that maybe something is going to happen. So can you prepare for this, Cedric?
So you can prepare for it. And the way we prepare for it is just, you know, doing our best with trainings, you know, teaching individuals, you know, what to look for when they're outside on the ground, you know, trying to stay away from large gatherings. When you're seeing large gatherings, you know, try to push them to the back. And just, you know, making sure that individuals understand that, you know, in times like this, things will happen.
It's a very real possibility when you see a large group of people. Sam, how do you prepare for something like this?
Well, first, I have to give credit to the people that are the boots on the ground, the outreach workers, because it's only a small amount of them. I think about in Austin, it's about 15, and Austin is the biggest community in Chicago. So one of the things that when we know holidays are coming up, so outreach workers, everybody's working 24/7, responding to shootings and homicides. But also when we see that, or if we visualize and see that something's coming up and it seems to be a large group gathering, we're calling each other's, our partners in that area, saying, hey, this is happening. Leverage your relationship with the groups. Let them know we're going to be there. Also plugging in our peacekeepers so they can leverage their relationship.
And when you talk about, you know, sort of having the vision that something is coming up, are you talking about just by actually visually seeing just large groups or hearing word of large groups gathering in certain pockets? Or are you hearing even before that about like potential violence that may come?
I say both. Unfortunately, we know that a lot of these large group gatherings, when they happen, unless it's people that are a little bit older, those tend not to be violent. But what we've seen is with the youth, it's like as soon as we see it brewing, we're like, we're afraid, like something's going to happen. So we're on top of it as quick as possible, monitoring social media as well.
Yeah.
And automatically texting, calling each other's within the organization and even the partners that work the boundaries of the place.
Yeah. So, Deputy Mayor, what do you think about that, what Sam just said, just sort of the instinct to sort of lean one way when it's a younger gathering versus an older gathering. And the fact that what I mentioned earlier, holiday weekends sort of tend to bring this on more than other times of the year. Why do you think that is the case?
Yeah, I do think the continued need for when we think about conflict, how do we resolve conflict and how do we move towards, okay, what heals this situation versus leaving it as is? And then what we see is these explosions, and whether it's large group gatherings or what might seem random, and it's not really a random act, right? There was a buildup to that. So what do we need to continue to invest in that to be able to properly interrupt on that and asking, okay, what is the solution here? How do we heal from this situation? I think those are continuing important. And it's tough for us to even talk about large group gatherings when we think about Chicago, right? People pay millions every year. I mean, tourism is up. Like, this is a city where we come and we celebrate in large groups. Like, that is, you know, concerts all over the place.
So, and I'm always careful to be clear that not every gathering of young people turns violent.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that that's crystal clear as
well. Yeah, but with that said, how do we make sure that we are creating the space to make sure that people are, safety is number one. Mm-hmm. Safety is always number one. So I do think what we're starting to see even more and more, there is a team that's constantly evaluating, you know, what we hear in terms of on the intelligence side and really making those decisions as to be able to properly evaluate that. CPD is currently always doing that. They work with CVI partners around that to be able to make that evaluation. Okay, is there a real safety threat here?
The CVI being community violence intervention.
Yeah, thank you. Community violence intervention to be able to say, is there a serious threat here? And how do we make sure we show up? But also just making sure that we show up, period, right? It's not just the work of the mayor's office, of CPD, of CVI, but we as a community, we as a safety ecosystem, as parents, as teachers, accountability happens when that relationship exists.
There's a collaboration.
Absolutely.
Right?
So, yeah, so it's not a, yeah. So I think
between
that's—
between the city and groups like theirs?
Between the city, groups like theirs, and just every, I would say everyday people. I know we just saw some investments in at the YMCA, they're expanding what their spaces look like to be able to be more intentional around being able to create spaces for gatherings for young people to be able to have more membership. So I think everyone has a role in this collective call around safety. So when there is a gathering that's happening, it is surrounded by really a community that's ready to help out. So I think those are absolutely critical.
Yeah.
You also mentioned in terms of just sort of the irony behind this, right? Especially as the temperature rises and unfortunately tempers decrease. And then the reality of where we're at in Chicago, where there's a harsh reality we have to deal with. In some places in Chicago, for a 13, 14-year-old person, it's easier to get access to a gun than to a therapist. That's a very real reality for people. Mm. And so what does that mean? What does that create for us as an infrastructure when conflict starts to happen?
What does that mean for you as the deputy mayor of community safety to even say a stat like that, right? And to know that that is true, that a 13 or 14-year-old has more access in some pockets of the city to guns than therapy?
It creates the greatest sense of urgency. It creates, and again, as the deputy mayor, knowing this, it creates me making sure that we as a community, we as a society, to be able to say, what are we going to do about this? How do we think about conflict and conflict intervention when it's happening? So that's what it does. Those are the things that keeps me up, especially when you think about the gatherings and everything else like that.
Right.
And how to interrupt it.
Cedric and Sam, I want to hear from you as the deputy mayor just sort of talked about the collaboration efforts and what that looks like. Tell me what barriers exist to being able to work with the city, for instance, and work with other stakeholders, like the parents and community members. Sam, you first.
So I'm going to say that it's all about relationships and trusting the process. People, if you don't know what CVI is, right, community violence intervention, so therefore you don't know how to use us, what's our strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that once we found that out, then the system's working. When the brother first came, and I got to give him his flowers because before he started on that Monday, we had a mass shooting in West Garfield.
You're talking about Deputy Mayor Andre.
Deputy Mayor.
Yeah, because he's new to the role, right?
He showed up to one of my coworkers' house, and she lost a son. So I was like, this guy's in it for real, and I respect that. So when a person like him is coming on, I'm like, he believes in this. He believes that we have the solution here amongst the collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's just about pouring more into the people that are doing the work, educating community members, let them know that there is a plan, because a lot of people don't know, especially when they see CVI groups and they just see lime green shirts. They're like, who's these highlighting people, right? We don't know who
they are. What
are
they here for? What are they doing?
What are they here for? What are we doing? So I say, once you know what we do, that it's not a magical powder in the air, then educate. Tell your networks. Take our card. Call us if you see something, because we are a community-based organization, so we're hyper-local. We have the relationships. Let us leverage those.
Yeah. Tell me more, Cedric, from your perspective with Chicago CRED. What has collaboration looked like? And if you've got examples of effective collaboration that you've seen since you've been with the team.
Yeah. So examples of collaboration for Chicago CRED looks like basic collaboration all over the city, knowing that we are on this in North Lawndale and on the South Side. Them where our two biggest sites at. But the thing about it is we service them two areas. The thing about it is we collaborate with all type of organizations, not just CVI organizations or CPD, things of that nature, but we collaborate with faith-based organizations, you know, anyone who is close to community. So with that said, it's just about, you know, being able to collaborate with everybody and then everybody just being on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Deputy Mayor, you and faith leaders and other community organizations like Live Free Illinois, you held a press conference on Monday morning. You're proposing a dedicated Department of Gun Violence Prevention. So tell us about that. How is that department going to be different from the city's Office of Community Safety that it's going to replace ultimately?
Yeah, and I think some of it goes to what you asked before in terms of what are some of the barriers that we see. I think this idea that every time change is always happening, whoever's in this seat or whatever the seat, it almost feels like there's a reset in what we do, how we do it. So how do we now create a space that has a singular focus around driving down gun violence? Mm. And to be able to acknowledge that gun violence is a top issue, is a top public safety issue for the city of Chicago, and how do we be able to create that in a space that's part of the public safety infrastructure mm-hmm. that we already have that's already in existence, right? The OEMCs, the CPDs, like those are part of and those critical parts of our public safety infrastructure.
But this gives us a standalone department that focuses solely on gun violence reduction.
Exactly, solely on gun violence reduction. And how do we learn from the successes of some of our sister states, right? So this is not, it's innovative in a way for Chicago, and it's been, but this is something that, you know, organizers have been working on for years. Mm. And also it's something that we've seen all over the place. We see it in New York, and we see it in different states.
Can you call up any examples that you've seen across the country that have worked that Chicago might want to pull from?
Well, I mean, I think as we develop this is part of this. So I believe Live Free and some of the other organizers, they're working with those other counterparts.
I see.
But I know, like, right now, I just got the question the other day. Well, you know, New York City is bigger than Chicago and has seen more decreases than Chicago when it comes to issues of gun violence. But when you look at some of those infrastructures, and that's one that existed, that's really consistent. We did even start to see it even at the federal level before the previous administration sort of, you know, there's just a change, right? So new administration, there's a change. So what does it look like to be able to be consistent so we can have these consistent drives down? So that's number one. I think that's really critically important. And that's part of what it does that's really different from the Office of Community Safety. Now, the Office of Community Safety still is that umbrella office mm-hmm. for all of the public safety infrastructure, but this is one that is entire focus is around gun violence. Like, they will be the gun violence
That's their focus.
Reduction expert.
So, Sam, what do you want to see from an established Department of Gun Violence Prevention?
I think there's some requirements. I would like the person who's leading the initiative to be of color, to have had some type of justice impact. Also, is not new to gun violence, because therefore, if they don't have those qualifications, those degrees that I would say that they have to learn in life, then it becomes a job and not a responsibility for them. And when you ask Deputy Mayor, I give you a prime example in L.A., and also, I think about L.A. and New York. They've been investing in community violence intervention.
For a long time.
For over 20 years. So we see the decrease in violence. And then I think about the GRID office in L.A. where they have a partnership there. And it works. So they're at the table. People who come from the neighborhood, that it hits different. It comes from the gut where you're like, I got to fight for my people. So whenever this office is created, I would ask, if you're going to lead this initiative, then it's got to come from the soul that you want to make a change.
Do you think, Cedric, that this department would be impactful?
Yes, I think it would be very impactful. You know, having different individuals from the community being a part of the staff. And I'm not going to say that it has to do with any color or anything like that or any race. What I'm going to say is it needs to be an individual who come from the same background of community violence, right? Mm-hmm. So if the individual comes from that background and has lived that lifestyle, I believe that they can be beneficial to the staff. Mm-hmm.
So you're hearing some criteria here. I see you've got a pen in your hand. I hope you're taking notes, right? Give us, last word here, your final takeaways from this conversation and something maybe that we can look forward to, that we can expect, because we can't keep having weekends like the one that we just had.
Yeah, and again, thank you. I was taking notes because of, this is something that's been, I think, in large part group-led, in a collaborative effort. And so we as a city, we're not the only voice here. I would say, though, as we continue to move forward, just in that regard, right, we're talking about the individual, but this is about creating the sustained effort where we all know this is the goal. This is the goal. What can we do? So with that said, what is our collective call? Whether you're the grandma who's listening to this, sitting on the porch, like, how do you push belonging in your neighborhood? What does that look like in your day-to-day work, professionally or personally, to help move Chicago into being one of the safest big cities in America?
We'll leave it there for now. Emmanuel Andre is Chicago's Deputy Mayor for Community Safety. Sam Castro is with the Institute for Nonviolence Chicago, and Cedric Hawkins is with Chicago CRED. Thank you all so much. Let's turn to the top local news stories of the day. ABC stations around the country, including Chicago's ABC 7, are urging viewers to push back against Trump's FCC. A Chicago area hospital is in danger of going dark, and the Cubs are celebrating 10 years since their World Series win. WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and Chicago Sun-Times reporter Caitlin Washburn join me to help break down the headlines. Claire kicks things off with details on that new tribute to the 2016 Cubs.
They're pulling out all the stops with this one. The team will honor, of course, the 2016 champs with a new entrance at Wrigley Field. They're calling it the Champions Gate. A team sort of unveiled this design on social media yesterday, honoring the most recent title, also the titles won in 1907 mm-hmm. and 1908. It's kind of a big gold archway, looks kind of historic, a couple of designations to the World Series titles that they've won, certain players, et cetera.
And that's so, pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
I had never heard of that before, a championship gate or Champions
Archway.
Gate.
Yes, Champions Gate. So it's going to be along Clark Street and serve as kind of the main entrance to Gallagher Way. So not under the marquee into the ballpark, but just to the left where you enter that green space that's mm-hmm. just adjacent to Wrigley Field. And they're going to have sort of a little soiree, a dedication ceremony, certainly some old faces on July 18th.
Yeah. And usually when renderings of anything are released, it's years before we actually get to see it in real life. So this is kind of nice that we get to see it, next month?
Yeah, rickets don't mess around.
We don't have to wait long. In other news, Caitlin, a Chicago area group of trans rights is facing a federal lawsuit. So these are activists. Fill us in.
That's right. So the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, which is based in East Dundee, was sued by the Federal Trade Commission for their policies surrounding affirming trans youth rights and gender-affirming care. This isn't the first group to be sued by the Trump administration. I believe the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Endocrine Society also have been sued over their guidelines.
Okay.
And this is just a part of an ongoing attack from the Trump administration on trans youth.
Yeah. And to that end, how are these local trans rights groups reacting? Right. As you said, this is like one in a series of actions from the Trump administration. I imagine it's got to be tired and old by this point, but what are you hearing?
My colleague Violet Miller spoke to some folks, and what she heard was kind of just, this is par for the course. This is what we're getting used to. This is just another day. And, the group is gearing up to fight this and challenge this. They'll just keep fighting, but no one's really surprised mm-hmm. at this point.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. Now, in other news, local ABC stations around the country, including ABC 7 right here in Chicago, they're running commercials that you may have seen so far. They're asking viewers to call the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, to keep them on the air. Now, it comes as the FCC continues to review whether ABC should retain the right to own local TV stations in major U.S. markets. And during a time when the federal agency is clashing with the broadcaster over perceived political speech on the show called The View, that's ABC's national daytime talk show, for those who aren't familiar. So media experts are saying this is rare for a broadcaster to enlist viewers or listeners like this, right? They're asking for people to like pick up the phone and dial a number and act now in the midst of this dispute with the FCC. So,
well, as we know here at WBEZ, I mean, when we lost federal funding, we looked to our membership, mm-hmm. you know, people to voice their concerns, to push back and to support the station. So
that's
certainly
right.
In line with, you know, what we're seeing in radio as well.
Yeah, I saw an ABC 7 post on social media. Have any of you seen any of this floating around or the ads on TV?
Yeah, I've seen a few. I mean, and it's, you know, they're not being shy about that. This is from the team from The View, which, you know, has a huge daytime audience.
Right. In other news, in federal court news, rather, it sounds like there's more fallout. This is in that Broadview 6 case. Claire.
Yeah, the probe continues. U.S. Attorney Andrew Boutros says that now he will review nearly 20 years of grand jury proceedings involving a veteran prosecutor who is at the center of the Broadview 6 case. So the Sun-Times reporting this morning that the motion lays out several inappropriate comments made by Sherry Mecklenburg to grand jurors. And this is something, you know, Boutros has been under the microscope. John Seidel has been all over this guy.
Oh, he sure has.
And so now he's saying he's going to go and review 20 years of some of these proceedings.
So this is part of an ongoing reform effort in the U.S. Attorney's Office, right?
Yeah, and 10 defendants in 3 cases, even so far, have now seen their federal criminal charges permanently dropped as a result of the grand jury controversy in Boutros' office. Questions do still remain about who redacted some of those alleged misconduct. Remember those recordings, and we were actually able to view transcripts of some of these things that were said. So some questions still remain about those transcripts, about that veteran prosecutor that was given to U.S. District Judge back in April. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like, you know, the questions are going to have answers, and we'll see what those answers
we'll
are going to be.
Those answers are.
You know, in the weeks and months ahead, we'll see. This could take a long time. I mean, I'm sure AI will help, but 20 years of proceedings, of documents, of transcripts, sounds like that's
going to
take a
while.
Oh,
that's a lot to comb through,
yes,
for sure.
Ma'am.
So tell me what other stories you're following, Claire. Give us a couple.
Shifting gears, kind of some fun news, especially since we lost NASCAR, but I guess F1 is gaining some traction. I guess there are some F1 fans here in Chicago, and Chicagoans can soon get behind the wheel of their own Formula One car.
Oh, cool.
This will be a virtual experience, but it will be the city's first F1 arcade, slated to open in River North. Sun-Times reporting, this is going to be pretty big. 61 full-motion racing simulators. And these are substantial, right? You're very much feeling like you're in a car, multiple different options for game modes, and you can race on your own. You can also race in a team. They're also going to host watch parties. But this was a pretty big site. Remember the old Rock Bottom Brewery, One West Grand Avenue. It's been vacant for several years, so this is going to occupy that space, do a little reno in there, and it'll be the 7th F1 arcade location in the United States. It actually debuted back in 2022 in London, so there are a couple others over across the pond there.
Yeah, no, that sounds very cool. Sounds much better than my time at Dave and Buster's.
We've come a long way.
But if you're ever looking for, you know, to meet some interesting people, see some interesting things, go into a Dave and Buster's into an afternoon and sit at the bar.
I'll take your word for it.
Exactly. All right, Caitlin, a Chicago area hospital might lose power in the coming weeks. Fill us in on that.
Yeah, this is a part of the ongoing saga with West Suburban Medical Center in Oak Park, just right on the eastern edge of Oak Park on the border of the Austin neighborhood. This hospital's been going through a lot. But yeah, just yesterday I was sitting in court and the attorneys speaking with the judge mentioned that ComEd posted a notice on the hospital doors saying that you need to pay your electric bills or the power will be off on July 8th.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And yeah, you alluded to it already, but yeah, you and I have sat here and talked about the struggles of this hospital here on this show. I mean, there's a legal battle between the owners. None of the 28 elevators work. Is any part of it currently operational?
No. So this was so a couple weeks ago, the elevators failed, like the last elevator failed. And they had reopened clinics, and then a separate independent organization had been running their clinics at West Suburban.
Okay.
And they have a dialysis clinic on the top floors of this hospital, and all the elevators failed.
Oh my goodness.
And on June 11th, the Oak Park firefighters showed up and had to like help patients get up and down the stairs to get to their appointment. So the village stepped in and they were like, okay, so the hospital is now currently shut down, but still for a hospital to lose power, I think that really sums up how dire the situation is at West.
I mean, also embarrassing, a notice on the wall.
Yeah.
Come on, ComEd.
Yeah.
Right? Let's talk about Brookfield Zoo. It's helping repopulate a critically endangered species in Puerto Rico.
That's right. The Puerto Rican crested toad. So a fun part about working in news is you get to hear what your colleagues are working on, and you get to hear about news before it comes out. So I was talking to my colleague Ambar about this a couple weeks ago,
okay. And
it's a pretty cool story. Basically, this toad was thought to be extinct. It's the only toad that's native to Puerto Rico, and the Brookfield Zoo Conservatory got involved in conservation efforts. And in 2017, they were sent tadpoles and have since been, the most recent batch that they sent to Puerto Rico, they sent 12,000 tadpoles.
Oh, wow.
That'll be released in the wild to help rebuild this population, which is pretty exciting.
So it's Puerto Rico's only native toad species.
That's right.
And just because of how few of them were remaining, people thought they were extinct.
That's right.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
And we're bringing them back.
We're bringing them back.
And this all gained popularity thanks to Bad Bunny.
That's right. That's right.
He featured them in his work, didn't he?
He did. He's kind of taken the toad on as a mascot, a symbol of resilience. You know, if this toad can make it back, you know, the Puerto Rican people can be strong.
I love it. I love it. So it sounds like they reached a milestone recently in the effort.
Yeah, that was that 12,000 tadpoles going to the island. So it's exciting. It's cool to, you know, for our suburban zoo to be a part of this global effort to bring this one species of toad back. But it matters.
It does.
It totally matters to the ecosystem of the island. It makes a big difference, and it's exciting.
I see what you did there. It totally matters.
Unintentional.
Claire
I would
Lane
never
says
do that to
one
you.
Toad at a time. and our producer Maha Ahmed says, should we pair all celebs with an endangered species? Because, you know, Bad Bunny's got the toad, you know.
Oh my God.
Let's think about that. What other stories are on your radar?
You know what? I'm back in court on Thursday for the West Sub drama, to be honest. They're trying to reach a settlement agreement, which, you know, to our point earlier, you know, hopefully they'll reopen. And this is the legal battle between the two people who own the hospital. So we will see. But this is, you know, a story that I think is important that we should stick on is, you know, this is not the, yes, this hospital is rather dramatic, but a lot of safety net hospitals are at risk because of cuts to Medicaid funding.
Mm.
And a lot are on the hook for many millions of dollars to the state. There was a great Tribune story from over the weekend that got into that. But
okay.
Yeah, I think that this is something we got to keep an eye on because these hospitals are like the last line of support for so many communities.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's something I'm going to be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and we'll look forward to your reporting. That's Caitlin Washburn with the Sun-Times and WBEZ's Claire Lane.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yason, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.